Take your time.
No.
Warm up for 2 seconds.
Yeah, I'm going to shut this off.
See if I can.
I hate when you deal with alcoholics. I'm not dealing with one, but a friend of mine was. It's people who have alcoholics in their life.
This works.
Oh, there you go.
I can hear you.
See if I can do this. Want to hear a song?
I would love that. I would love to hear the song you wrote, the new song.
Oh, I'll do that off the air for you. Because I don't want to play it now because then people will hear it.
Yeah, exactly.
The abbreviated version.
Wow.
But I, oh, thanks. I have this theory that, oh, wait, I should play this in. Hold on. Hey, this is John. This is Home From Here. You know this brilliant woman that I'm with, Paula Young. You know her already. And I'm going to stop playing and start talking.
That was beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
It was like a thunderstorm.
Oh, wow.
Coming
Thank you
in
very
across
much.
The ocean.
I will take that review. Thank
and
you.
And then it rained, and then it stopped.
Oh.
Right?
I love that
That's
analogy.
That's what it sounded and
oh,
felt like.
Thank you. And I, so like the old studio, there was never any room to warm up or anything. And I made myself a promise when I came here, I was going to take 10 minutes and warm up. And of course, I've done like 10 shows here now, and I haven't warmed up for any of them. And I felt it in my hands. I'm at an age where you got to warm up now.
I was driving here, and I could feel the need to just put my shoulders back.
Right, right.
I have that line between my eyes, and I can feel my brows pushing into it.
Oh, wow. Are you tense?
No, it's – you have – your lines
– My lines are all messed up.
But they're not regular.
Yeah.
They're – like waves.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Who has that?
I got banged in the head a lot, so
but
I kind of.
They're beautiful.
Oh, thank you
Instead
so much.
Instead of having these big furrows that run one way or the other, yours kind of just like undulate, like waves.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you very much.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, that's it's weird. I know.
Unusual.
Unusual. Thank you. Much better said. So you're well?
I am okay. I am apprehensive about things. I lay in bed at night and worry about. The salamanders and the screech owl that I hear in my window and the coyote pack. And then I worry about the child in the streets of New York who has an abusive father. And I worry about the children starving in Gaza. And then I worry about the poor people of Israel. And then I worry about Haiti and Somalia. And then I go downstairs and I get a cup of coffee and I look in my fridge and it's full. And I am so lucky. We're all so lucky we live here.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you believe in good and evil?
That's such a good question. I believe that all human beings are basically only slightly developed as sentient beings. And when a bear eats the carcass of a deer, it's already dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's becoming nourished from that. When a bear kills something to eat, it's taking an action.
Right.
Because it needs to feed itself.
Right.
So when we catch a fish to eat it, that to me is because we need to eat.
Right.
But when we factory farm animals and forget that they're living things and we eat meat every day without giving it a thought, that's where I think it goes from being a need to wanton destruction.
Right.
And so good and evil, need versus greed, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm torn. I kind of think I do believe in evil because I'm of that school that, you know, I won't understand light unless I have seen darkness. So and I firmly believe in good. So I think, okay, there must be evil, so because I understand good to contrast it against something. So I kind of your worry list. So much of that in my head is solvable, and we aren't solving it, and I don't get why, and that's why I ask good versus evil.
See, I don't think it's evil. I think we're using the wrong word. I think we're programmed to think black and white, but everything's gray.
Right.
Or it's a lot of different colors. And the night is dark, but it's not evil. What's going on in the world is greed and power, the desire for greed and the desire for power. Is that good?
No.
Is it evil?
I don't know. I mean, I know it's not good. And yeah, and there's a spectrum, obviously, between good and evil, or, you know, absolute evil and absolute good. There's a spectrum.
The man who locks up children in a basement and then goes down there every night, beats them, and then forces them to have sex, and then beats them and starves them, is mentally ill.
Yes, as I have been, but he's also evil.
His actions are evil.
Right.
Is he evil or is he mentally ill?
I struggle with this because that is a tough question for me because I was crazy. And I always struggle with how accountable I need to be for what I did when I was crazy.
Did you feel like you were crazy while you were doing it?
No. I didn't feel like I was crazy, and I didn't realize – I didn't set out to do bad things.
Don't judge yourself. When I was an actor, remember our teachers would say – Charles Manson didn't think he was a bad guy.
Right.
Right, okay.
Right.
So when you were doing these things, did you feel like what you were doing was wrong?
Some of them yes, some of them no.
Did you enjoy doing them?
No. Okay. Kind of not.
So then that wasn't evil.
Right, right.
It was angry or?
It was angry. It was
rageful.
Yeah.
Vindictive.
Yeah. Right. But then the question becomes, if it's not evil, how accountable am I for it?
Child molesters have been able to group up because of internet, World Wide Web.
Right.
So child molesters in Thailand and child molesters in Canada can all meet for child molestation conferences where they tell themselves that the children want to take part in this. This is one thing I've heard and read. They don't think they're evil because they have support of other people who think just like them.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So what they think...
Confirmation bias, right.
Right. Right. So they don't think they're doing anything bad, but we look at it and say, that's evil.
But are they accountable for it? Even though they don't think they're doing bad.
I think that a lot of them are arrogantly proud of what they do.
Right. But should they be held accountable for it? Should there be a legal consequence for it because it's not –
Because society says it's wrong.
Because it's an illness. Because it's a product of an illness.
because our society says it's wrong.
Right.
I believe that having sex with a child is wrong. I think it's a damaged human being who desires it, a damaged human being who does it. Our society thankfully says it's wrong. So should they be held accountable? Yes. Right. Should they be incarcerated?
Yes. And I will tell you why. Not because there are some illnesses to which treatment takes too long. And there's a window where is there a rehabilitative – here we go. Is there a rehabilitative component to the legal system? I've been there. No.
That's right.
There's not even a little bit.
You're not going to change a child molester. The damage is too intrinsic and deep.
But even if – assume you can, because I believe in change. It's going to take too long, and you're opening up – and for the safety of others, that person needs to be contained.
While that person's contained, the rest of us have to pay for someone to watch over them, for them to be fed and housed.
Right.
So going back to what you said about the window, there was a time where they were thrown out the window off the mountain into the lion den. But our society wants to protect everyone. I've done animal rescue for my whole life, it seems, and people who breed purebred dogs – will take a puppy that they see at birth is damaged or not to standard, and they kill it.
Right.
Because they say this is a damaged animal. They can see it visually. Human beings become damaged psychologically as they grow. Someone may have hurt this person's mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now they are 19, and they have the need to get a gun and shoot everybody. Do we put them in jail and keep them alive?
Do we keep them alive? Yes.
Why?
Because it's not a case of them or us. If it was a case, if the resources were such that it's them or us, then we live, you die. But it's not a case of that. We have enough resources to keep them alive.
In this society.
In this society.
Okay, let's move this to it's a very poor country with a wavy judicial system.
Country X. Country X.
Okay,
right.
They don't have the resources to keep them alive.
Well, that's interesting. Does the morality change because you don't have – the resources, or is the morality the same?
Is it morality based on our societal ideas of what's moral?
Yeah, and part of that is resources. Like your morality, you develop a moral sense based on your resources. We think it's wrong to steal a car. In countries where there's no cars, they have no opinion about whether it's wrong to steal a car.
But there are other cultures in this country where the entire community has 10 cars that are communal cars, and everyone gets to use them.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm torn between that too, because that's communism.
No, it's living in community.
Okay.
Communism is a construct, a political construct. It's not libraries are communal.
Right.
We all use them. We all pay into them.
Right.
This society, this group, I'm thinking of them, I'm not going to name them, has 10 cars for 100 people.
Well, A, thank you, because that's less shit you're blowing into the air, so I appreciate that. B, when I was in school, when I was in college, I was touring, and one of the tour stops was a reservation for Native Americans.
In Canada or here?
Here.
Okay.
And I think we stayed 4 or 5 days, and they had amazing facilities. A beautiful school, one store where everything was subsidized. A loaf of bread was a nickel. Gorgeous. Every single lawn stacked with beer bottles, mm-hmm. and the hierarchy was based on the size of your dog.
Right.
Because the need to be accountable for yourself, to provide for yourself and those you love, was removed, human nature took over, and we're not good if we don't have to provide.
Okay. That's so big. You saw the special, The Blue Zones?
No.
Okay. The Blue Zones talks about where it is in the world that people live the longest. And they're called the Blue Zones. And there are some all over the world, some here too. And they need purpose.
Yes. There it is. And better put. Purpose is better put.
So if you take away a person's purpose, you take away their sense of community, their friends, their fun, their exercise, their diet, and you just give them money, they're going to become self-centered, become inward, go away from society, become insular, and there you have all the beer bottles. And
right.
Just read a little bit of a book about that, how our society has become fat and bloated and greedy, and we're turning away from each other and seeing the world through this dark lens. It's unnecessary.
It is unnecessary. Is it unexpected? Did the internet screw us?
Yes, and so has artificial intelligence. I was at someone's house who's a nerd, and he started to play with artificial intelligence, and he said, okay, ask me a question, and I did, and then he, within seconds, 25 answers came up. And I said, okay, wait, I don't know that stuff because I don't have an encyclopedia of information, but have it write a haiku about a rose. I said, I'll beat that machine. And I did.
Beat in terms of speed?
I wrote better
haikus
than artificial intelligence.
Right.
So yes, as an information gathering technology, great. For medicinal reasons, great. But for humanity, no.
Now, I mean, it's evolving too. And it's the thing, because I'm with you. I relate to music, and I say, people ask, are you worried about the computer writing a better song? And I go, I'm not, because the parts of a song, the best songs are the imperfect ones, and the best parts of songs are the mistakes. And so I don't think computers to date have not been trained to make mistakes. And
I agree with that. Well, and so would John Lennon.
Yeah.
Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
But if we are raising a society of people that don't know the difference.
That's the problem. At some point, well, thank God we have enough recorded music written by humans that there's a reference point. Good and evil, right? There's a reference point. You can compare the AI against what's been written. But I also think that it's hard to have an opinion about AI because it's still evolving. Am I worried about AI today?
That's bullshit. Oh,
no,
sorry.
No, you can say bullshit.
Okay. I'm sorry. I don't agree. I think AI is pointless. Pointless for not the right word.
Okay.
I think AI has its purpose, but I think AI is ultimately going to become our enemy. Not everyone's going to be able to have a 9-to-5 job. And some people might be able to strive to be the grocery store bagger.
Right.
And we have that in our society, and that's the truth. And we have different levels, strata, et cetera, caste system like we discussed last time we were here. If you put people out of jobs because you can, why? What are we doing?
If you put them out of a job and don't give them another job.
But those jobs that the machine's taking – now, this AI is starting to attack the middle class, the middle management.
Sure.
You know?
Be an ad copywriter.
Good luck.
Yeah. But on the one hand, I totally agree with what you're saying. But on the other hand, then I think, okay, if ad copywriting – because the wheel took away jobs – The AI
no, it didn't.
Yeah, it did. It took
how?
A long time. Pack mule. lost his job.
The pack mule was used. He was never had a job.
Okay. So a baggage carrier. However people transported things before the wheel took away a job. Every piece of technology, the oven took away a job because now the guy who makes the fire doesn't have a job to cook. Technology has always taken away jobs.
Technology is supposed to make our life easier.
Right. But it does always take away jobs.
But there is a point where we're doing it and it's folly.
There's a point where – okay. So what you're talking about is – it's interesting because in programming what you're talking about is alignment. And the concept with AI is at some point you have to align AI's interests with humanity's best interests. And that's and what you're saying is it's a made argument that AI's interest at some point is going to depart, if it hasn't already, depart from humanity's best interest, and AI is going to worry about AI's.
Okay, AI is not a real thing. We give it that information. So what are the interests of AI?
Well, when AI has the level of cognizance that it may or may not have yet. And we have taught AI that self-preservation is the biggest drive we have is self-preservation. And it learns, okay, self-preservation, biggest drive. Now we say, hey, AI, I'm going to hit the off button. And they say, and AI reacts with, no, you're not. Now you got a problem.
Okay. This is complicated and wonderful. self-preservation used to be. But now we have people who would rather be anesthetized. I know that if I put this needle in my arm, I could die, but I would take the risk because it feels so good. Self-preservation's out the window.
Self-preservation is blurred because the person putting the needle in thinks that's self-preservation, because the consequence of not putting the needle in is worse than the consequence of putting the needle in, and it's worth the risk. And at some point, been there. At some point, the risk doesn't get – I was not there with needles, but I was there crazy.
To feel better, right. It's worth it.
Right.
Okay.
So, which is self-preservation.
Ah, interesting.
So
then the core intrinsic self, the lizard brain.
Right.
Is that different than the desirous brain, the one that wants to feel better? Isn't self-preservation in the lizard brain?
And in the wants to feel better brain, because your physical and emotional, both states have self-preservation. You're in a relationship with someone who provides greatly but is emotionally a dick. I know you leave. That's emotional self-preservation, even when it runs contrary to physical self-preservation. So I don't know that you can separate the two.
Right. So –
and when AI says, okay, self-preservation is the jam, and Paula says, you know, I think it's bad. I'm going to hit off. AI says, well, I'm going to turn the grid off before you can. And then there's a problem.
But that means AI would have to understand that the grid's that important. It only knows what we tell it.
Well, and somebody's going to tell it, hey, we need electricity.
So, okay. So then you make my point. Why are we doing it? Is it folly?
Probably. It's probably a big mistake because if it was a system where AI was only learning what we tell it and we are in control of what we tell it, that's one case. But that's not the case. The case is AI knows what we tell it and AI knows what it overhears.
It knows what everybody tells it.
Right. But not knowing that you're telling. I don't know when I'm texting that I'm allergic to baked beans to Trish, that AI now knows that I'm allergic to AI, because I'm not willingly telling it. We are now no longer in control of what AI knows.
Right, because there's something that's some component, bigger component,
right.
Whether it be the Chinese sitting with their listening devices on our TikTok or
right.
It's complicated. And
well, then, so now boil it down to a bad science fiction movie. If you're watching a science fiction movie and there was a robot walking around just grabbing all the information available, and no governing body was in control of it, you go, oh, that's the villain.
That's the villain. But the thing, we made the villain.
Right.
It's folly.
Right. Yeah. But there's also a world where it could create a vaccine way faster than we can. There's a world where it can come up with a, you know, I was having this discussion about an AI president. There's a world where it could come up with solutions that we still have to vote on, but solutions that are better than what we – faster than what we could come up with or yes. other than
but
what we could
it,
come up
with. They will
be
practical and they won't have the human aspect.
Sometimes that's good. And
well, there you go.
Right.
So do we incarcerate the child molester or do we kill him?
We incarcerate him because
– But AI is not going to say that.
Well, right. That's why I would have an AI vice president. I would have the AI vice president and do it.
Because the practical is that what's useful,
mm-hmm.
the computer's going to say it's useful to have everyone be a functioning member of our society or of this factory.
Right.
Because we're all building machines. We're all building cars. The human says, oh, look, there's some extra lug nuts. Let me put them in a box because I might need them next year. Who mm-hmm. knows? The AI is going to say, no, that's ridiculous. Get rid of those. Recycle them. Melt them.
Right. Which is why you need the AI vice president mm-hmm. and you still need Paul on top of the AI.
And
saying,
John on
and,
top.
Anything, yes or no. But it's interesting too. Like, I don't think people will factor in the impact of – because you just made a great point. What happens when AI gets in the real world? And I don't think we're as alarmed about AI as we should be because the perception is AI is not in a real world. And my argument to that is drive a Tesla.
Oh, yeah.
You can have software downloaded into your car against your will without knowing. If it can do that, it can shut your car off.
Yes.
And so,
or someone else can.
Right. Someone else can shut your car off. That's AI in the real world.
And that's giving up our power to
right.
something else. Someone said to me the other day about money, currency.
Right.
A $50 bill, I give you a $50 bill for a cup of coffee. You give me back $48. So that $50
Unless
bill.
Unless it's Starbucks, then I give you back
$10. And then you take that $50 bill that I've just given you and you can buy $50 worth of stuff with it. But a credit card doesn't work like that, right? It all comes off the top. There's fees. There's taxes.
Right.
And so when we give up the gold standard, which I've read, we took away the real currency, right?
Yes. Agreed. And my daughter's a great example of that. 16 years old. And she learned it because we made her work and act in cash for 3 months. And because she did that, she's like, oh, wait. Because with a card, it's just dad puts stuff mm-hmm. on the card and I don't feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And with currency, I can feel it. I'm physically.
And then it's gone.
And then it's right. I'm actually giving
it's
you something.
It's not a dream.
Physical. So have we as society, because every generation says, we need it to be the way our generation had. Our generation was better. That's historical. Everybody thought that. But have we like finally – well, first off, is there a point in the timeline of humanity where that generation saying, wait, we need to take a step back is right?
Yes. I mean, we've become consumers. I think that's – we talked about this. In my opinion, the only thing that unites us as Americans is that we love to shop. We're consumers.
Right.
And we've gone away from volunteerism. We've gone away from, in large parts, the path to righteousness in terms of spiritual pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
Although there are pockets of that, I don't see that as an overarching anymore. We've become all about the self, our rights, our personal rights, our individual rights.
Mm.
Are we falling apart as a society because we're bloated and fat?
Well, that's how society does fall apart.
Yes,
right?
Look at Rome.
Right, gets bloated
and
fat.
And, yeah.
Yeah. The only thing I think we have that Rome and Greece didn't have is a knowledge of a global competition. And we're arrogant.
No more competition for
money.
Consumerism.
Right.
Again,
but at least that'll keep you lean. If we're worried about China, Mm-hmm. I'll get out of bed in the morning.
All right. So, okay. Then let's go back to the community where there's 10 cars for 100 people. And you said that's communism.
Right.
But it's a society that functions working together where the overall good.
Does that ever end well, though?
Yeah. Actually, it's,
it does?
It's been around since the 1800s.
Oh, wow. Okay. Cool.
And it's still there.
I'm down for that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then it does work well.
It works. Is everybody always happy?
Never. No. Right.
Do they have religion as an overarcher? Yes.
Okay.
It's a religious community.
Are you religious?
You know, I believe in religion, but I don't believe in God.
You believe in an overarching set of principles? And
yes. I believe like in the seven principles of Unitarianism. I do believe in religion, the repeating of good actions. But God, I think we pray to nothing. I think God is earth.
Hmm.
It protects us. It cares for us. It nurtures us. It feeds us. But it does.
Native American philosophy, right? Earth is church.
But the church, you go and you pray and you have this building around you and you have a group of society around you that lifts you and your faith in your mind lifts you and you have fear or hope or it answers questions. It's in your mind. It's the religion. Is anybody listening?
Is there an energy listening?
Energy doesn't listen, just like your heart doesn't listen. Your heart, you know, we say, I have to think what my heart tells me. Your heart is a pump. That's all it is. It's a pump. It's like saying, I have to listen to what my appendix tells me.
It does. Your heart's an electric pump, and electric is energy.
Yes, but the point I'm trying to make is that working from my brain or my heart, work from your brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's like saying, should I work from my liver or my brain? Don't work from your heart. Work
right.
from your brain. Your brain is your heart.
Right.
Your heart is a pump, electric
right.
pump.
Right. But
– works on energy.
Right. Works on it. So it does listen to energy. Your heart listens to electricity.
It doesn't listen to it. It
responds to it. Electricity says beat and I listen and beat.
Without –
So you don't believe in like manifestation?
I explain that.
Manifestation is I say, okay, I'm going to – I'm going to have a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I
– You make it happen.
I make it happen.
Yeah, I believe in that. I don't believe – I don't know the word manifestation for that. That would be called
but I'm
ambition.
I'm assisted in making it happen. Like cards fall into place.
Oh, no, I don't believe
You don't believe in that?
Mm-mm. No, because my life, I have wanted, desired, envisioned many things – and no cards fell into place. And there are today, I would say 500,000 John Burton wannabes who have had your exact desire but haven't been able to make it happen.
Right.
Because they're not you.
Or, see, I look at it a little differently. I would say that I don't know anybody smarter than you. I don't know anybody more generous than you. And I don't know anybody providing a better service to a community than you. So, you know, maybe those other things, cards didn't fall because there's a place where you're supposed to be.
Ugh.
And you're the – no?
I want to believe that. Do you know, we were talking about myself.
Yeah.
I would love to believe that were true. But you have hunches?
Yes.
Okay. You have deep-seated beliefs?
Yes.
That aren't about your brain, just in your gut, in your inner self, in your gut of your brain, because the gut is just a digestive process.
Yes, I must, because I trust my gut more than I trust my brain.
Okay. When I was a little kid, I was conceived by a woman – and a man, and my mother wasn't clear on who that guy was.
Okay.
She arrived pregnant from Italy to Venezuela, not being sure who the inseminator was.
Sorry.
And I was born in Venezuela.
I just saw a cyborg, the inseminator.
I was born in Venezuela. And when I was 6 months old, she took me back to Italy and she had a lover, a boyfriend, who was her provider. And he had been her lover for a long time. I was 20. She was 27 when I was born. But he told her he could not have children. Absolutely could not. So she had the guilt that she had cheated on him and he was not my father. And she continued to let him support her. And I guess I was in the way. And she felt she couldn't take care of me. So she put me in a boarding school at 6 months old. And I lived there until I was 2 and a half. Very high-end place. On the ocean in Italy.
Was it a Regia?
No, it's in a place called Nervi in Genoa, in the Ligurian coast, which is where Cinque Terre is.
Okay.
And I had nannies and it's sort of a Montessori school. I have
Reggio Emilia.
Reggio Emilia, no, it's northern of that.
Oh, okay.
That's further south.
Okay.
This was in south of Milan.
Okay.
So there's a couple of really odd videos that were retained from that period where it kind of looks like, I can't describe it. Children eat together, we're pottied together, sleep together, and you're all being taken care of by nurses and caretakers. And then my grandmother would take the train from Milan every weekend and visit me. And when I was 2 and a half, my mother came and got me. And I'm told that I screamed because I didn't know who she was. And she took me back to Milan, where we lived till I was 4, with this man who my mother was sure could not be my father because he was sterile, he told her. And then she married an American businessman and we lived all over the world with this guy. I mean, all over the place. And he adopted me and he loved me. Sometimes it was creepy. He never touched me. Never.
Right.
But I got this weird vibe from him. Like, I just a little creeped out sometimes. And
like he adored you too much?
Like it was something psychosexual about
him.
Oh,
okay, okay.
Yeah,
right.
And he raised me until I was married my mom. And then when I was 18, the shambles of that marriage and my mother's a whole thesis paper of her feeling desperation and dreadful loneliness and misunderstood and a child who had from 13 on rebelled against her. He divorced her. I came to New York to go to university. She followed soon after me. And so many things. Promiscuity in my part, rebellion. But I never became a drug addict or an alcoholic. I always was a do-gooder. I would do nice things. I remember being little and being nice to people to kind of make up for her because I wanted them to like her.
Mm.
So, and then, you know, New York. It's been New York where I live since then.
City.
City and then.
And then up here.
And then slowly working my way up to the magnificence of the Hudson Valley. I was a actress, waitress, worked in a plant store, worked in a French bakery, dated a French chef, learned to love food in England, actually, before that with another boy, and then here learned food, married a guy in the food business, learned how to care about people. Because caring for people isn't just an emotion. You can sit and emotionally masturbate, you know,
right.
I want to care. But you have to learn how to care for people, right?
It's a verb.
It's a verb. Love is a verb.
Right.
Action. So I have so many stories. And nobody cares. I care because they're my stories. But I'm so filled with angst, regret, outrage, because had I stayed in Italy, because it wound up the inseminator was the Italian guy.
The guy that couldn't do it actually did do it.
Right.
Got it.
And had she stayed, I'd be there. So my life, I feel, is a bunch of fractured pieces of jigsaw puzzles all over the place. And I've been trying to go around picking them up.
I see it. I see it vastly differently. So that my story, too, like I wasn't raised by my parents, too, right?
I want to hear your story.
Well, I mean, I was.
Because you always refer to it. What is it?
So I was born into the so I find out my biological father, and now I think my biological mother, and my biological father burned a hole through the universe, man. I mean, he was with my biological mother when she gave birth to me, made sure his last name was on the birth certificate, and then 10 days later married another one. Yeah. And there's
he was the inseminator.
Oh, yeah. You think your father dropped one bomb? My father populated the East Coast.
Wow!
It was I don't even know how many brothers and sisters I have.
Well, we sure did.
Yeah, because you went and looked.
I found a couple of distant because I was the only bomb he dropped. Yeah,
right. But I think. So I know a little bit about like being fractured and trying stuff and then not working, but trying to do good as the whole theme. And what I don't look at that as a bunch of misfires. I look at that as there's two ways to handle people who grew up like the way you and I grew up. One way is to get self-destructive and be an asshole and repeat the cycle. The other way, which I work really hard and seems like you've already done, is to break the cycle and just say, this happened to me. Pain happened to me. I know what pain is. I'm going to make sure anything I can do to stop pain elsewhere,
anywhere
I'm going to go
to. I see it.
When that – so that's your driving principle in life.
To be a good person.
To be a good person is your – if to be a good person is more important to you than any one career path and you have failed at that career path – or not failed, but that career path didn't – turn out the way you want it to, but you were a good person during it, you won.
I have completed multiple career paths successfully.
All right. So then you won and.
But you and I were never allowed to be a rose bush.
How do you mean?
We were meant to be rose bushes. But we weren't allowed to be. They took our roots and ripped them apart and said, nope, can't be one rose bush. You're going to be rose bushes everywhere.
Right. Right. Okay. But that's not better or worse.
But in retrospect.
Think about the you create jobs.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe the Runway Cafe isn't where you saw yourself 20 years ago, but you're making jobs for people. And providing probably the best place in the Hudson Valley to go listen to live music and eat. And it's great. And the energy there is different than everywhere else.
And thank you.
So home run.
Thank you. And I get that. And so maybe I'm sitting here in emotional masturbation saying, gee, my life would be different. Maybe
no.
I would have found myself had I never left Italy.
I'll tell you the work I did and it might apply to you. The work I did was I realized it's not that I'm not loved. It's not that I'm not doing good things. It's that I don't have the receptor to hear it. Like I may be doing great things and just not because if you don't receive love as a child, like you didn't, you don't get that muscle.
No, you don't. You have poor home training.
Yeah, and they call it developmental for a reason because that's when you're supposed to be developing that. So then when you land as an adult like you and me and you don't have the ability to recognize when you're doing something good or to recognize that you're being loved or to recognize that you're being appreciated, you make decisions on the assumption that you're not, and that fucks you up.
Or you have a lot of self-doubt, yeah.
Yeah, because you aren't hearing – how loved, respected, appreciated, and accomplished you really are. Because you can't. Because you didn't get it when you were a kid. So you don't know how to hear it. It's a foreign language to you.
Well, if someone hasn't spent the time to teach you.
Right.
When I was a little kid, I read a book called Pinocchio. the original version, which is this Italian storybook, and it's big. It's big. It's a lot of words, words, words.
Oh, wow.
And it's not just this movie. And in the book, it taught me, and I reread it recently, and it taught me every single moral belief I have.
That's amazing.
To be good, to not take too much, to take time, to stop, to help others. I would love to have been greedy. I would love to have more, but I don't really wouldn't love to have more. I have enough. And if I had more, I'd give it away.
Right. I know. I was so about to say, Paul, you are not the person to get more because you're just going to give it. Well, maybe you are the person to have more because you're just going to give it away.
I would give it. But right. The thing is, I would have liked to have had a better sense of being loved.
Yeah, but that's not your fault.
Oh, God, it's not. But the fault is so not the right word. The guy with the needle in his arm feels like nothing is his fault. And so he's doing this to make himself feel better. Because he's the
victim. Maybe let me take back. It's not your fault. It's not too late. You can develop the muscle.
I have the muscles now.
Okay.
I'm 65 years old with the muscles, but I still haven't got it right.
What do you think you're doing wrong? Because there's 500 people out there who want
Paula
wannabes.
I still haven't found what I'm looking for.
Okay.
What's that song?
Yes, right.
That song.
You too, yeah.
You too.
Yeah.
I don't know. I still haven't found what I'm looking for.
How do you know?
I know what I have. I know what it's worth. I know the value of it. But this morning at 2:38, I woke up and I was thinking about the children in Haiti and why can't we just do this big sweep of the people out of Gaza and just airlift them out and the screech owl outside the window. I don't have solutions. I try to keep my corner clean and make it better. We die in despair. I don't want to be that. I don't want to die in despair.
You're holding yourself responsible for the globe.
Call me Atlas.
That may not be your job. I think what you just said is what everybody should be looking for. I'm keeping my corner clean. If everybody did that, there wouldn't be a Gaza.
There wouldn't be a Gaza and there wouldn't be pollution.
All,
and we wouldn't
all
kill
you
all
can
these,
do.
These sheep and chickens and cows. I agree. It's just I am the queen of beating myself up.
I'm picking that up.
I also see where everybody else screws up. I really, and I'm not being an egomaniac about this, but I have had therapy since I'm 18. And I can sit here with a lot of information because I read a lot and I try to absorb. And I see where people just screw it up. And you can't call them up and say, listen, you got to stop doing this.
Right.
You can't.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, right. You
can't tell the child molester. That little four-year-old really doesn't want to be, you know.
Right.
Give you head.
Right.
Sorry.
Right.
What you're doing is wrong.
Right.
Because they don't listen.
And
how do you fix that?
Well, I think AI, we're going to put a chip in your head and you're going to not want that anymore. And maybe.
Okay. Now that's interesting.
And maybe because, you know what, I can't remember, neuro something. A chip has been developed where people who couldn't move their body can now communicate, move a cursor with their eye and communicate. And it, that type of technology is because I going back to that good and evil, I think my internet stalker is evil. And
you have an internet stalker.
I do have an internet stalker.
My son's stalker.
Oh, your son has a stalker?
He has a tremendous stalker. And she was supposed to be arrested or turn herself in. And thus far has not happened.
Oh, mine didn't get to that point. Mine just emails everybody I know and tells them I'm an asshole.
Okay. Is that illegal?
Well, it's one guy, but he never uses the same name. And it's always, his mother named him No Reply at yahoo.com. So is it something
– he love you?
I don't – maybe. It's very possible. The other possibility is I bought a – so I got a website called Ivy Style, and it's about
– what's it called?
Ivy Style.
Ivy
Style. Ivy Style is like a way of dressing. It's like white button down collar
letter
shirts.
Letter V?
Like Ivy, like the Ivy League.
Okay.
Like,
oh, Ivy. Yeah, Ivy,
right.
Style.
Ivy
got
Style,
it.
Right. And when I got it, I took it over. And when I took it over, it was racist. It was homophobic. It was misogynistic.
The person who owned it before you,
yeah,
was those things?
And allowed those things to be posted on the site and blah, blah. So the first thing I did was take a person who identifies as a male but biologically is female and wears these clothes better than any of us. And it's a male-oriented style, Ivy Style. But just does it better than all of us.
He's organically a man?
Organically a woman.
Organically a woman dresses like a man.
Right.
Okay.
And but does it so well. So I profiled them. And I hate mail, and I know where you live, and blah,
because
blah, blah.
Because you put a woman who, yeah, likes to dress as a man.
Yeah. I featured her.
Featured her.
And said that's
– and that was a sin.
Yeah, that's a big sin. So as a result most of these people – because this was years ago. Most of these people have lost interest. There's a guy who has not. Now, I don't know if he loves me or not, or I don't know if he's just like inherently
a
racist tool. And
does he love that woman?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't interact with her at all. No, it's all me. It's me all day long. Guy listens to everything I do, reads everything I write.
His name is No Reply?
His name is No Reply at Yahoo, or depending on whatever he – yesterday he was PW1234. It's whatever.
So why doesn't he just come and meet you and talk to you?
I would love that. I would love that.
Either my assessment just on first blush is he either loves you, he's envious of you, or he's angry at you because you've exposed something that he is afraid of.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think he's inherently evil. And I think that
inherently evil.
I do.
Evil.
Yeah. There is a difference between trying to fill a hole, and I'm going somewhere with this. There's a difference between trying to fill a hole in your life. I was more talking to myself.
I get it.
All right, John, the way you do a podcast is you make a point. Okay. There's a difference between filling a hole in yourself, which I get. You're racist, you're homophobic, you're misogynistic, you don't like that I'm not, and you don't like that I have a platform, and you don't, and you're angry about that, and you want to take a few swings. Great. Fantastic. How about it? There's a difference between that and a dogged persistence, a daily dogged persistence.
Okay, so you're a dog, and there's a difference between throwing a rock at a dog to get it to stop barking and throwing rocks at a dog until it dies.
There. That's it. Yes.
Right.
Well put.
Throwing rocks at a dog until it dies is cruel, mentally damaged, and you're going to say evil.
Right.
This man is
– or maybe I should just stop at cruel and mentally damaged.
Yeah. Because
okay.
I don't think the evil counts. What is evil? What – ultimate good.
Evil is what comes out of your head and body when you're sick.
Evil is what comes out of your head and body when you're mentally damaged.
Yeah,
and your actions are evil.
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't mean you are.
Right.
Or the fact that you don't care. Do you think Elon Musk is evil?
So he's an interesting case because he's a lot like us. He got the shit beat out of him when he was
and
a kid.
And by the way, Donald Trump did too. Osama bin Laden did too.
Right.
Both of them had horrific childhoods.
Do you think Donald Trump is evil?
I think Donald Trump is mentally damaged. Yeah, I listened to Mary Trump. I read her books, his niece. I've met Donald Trump several times.
What was your impression?
The very first time I met him was I was running the parade for the Yankees. They had won. I was working for Rudy. And he walked past me and I remember thinking, God, he has long feet. And we chatted a little bit and he made some very snarky statement about both the Yankees and about Rudy. And I thought, that's interesting. Right. And then I met him maybe four or five other times. But he's always trying to prove something and was always trying to get into the front of the line.
Mm.
Desperate need to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had a dad who called you a screw up, embarrassed you, humiliated you every day, and from what I heard, he was damaged even worse when he was little.
Mm.
He was violent to other children, and that's why they wanted to send him to military school.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was loved.
Right. Right.
Did you damage him? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Am I damaged? I've made up for it.
Thank you. Yeah, you have. And
but deep down, do I feel like I'm a terrible person because my mother didn't love me?
Is that?
Yeah, that's really it, baby. I think if you feel like your mother doesn't love you, I think you are pretty much scarred for life. And you can tattoo that scar. You can dermablade it, make it go away, but it's still always going to be there. You're never going to feel you're good enough, ever. I'm telling you, I don't think you can ever fix it.
Do you know internal versus external locus of control?
No.
Okay.
The theory is this. As long as I don't have to do anything yoga move.
You don't have to do a thing.
You know, yoga is Sanskrit for farting.
I did not know that.
That's what it is.
But it makes sense.
Yes.
So one approach to mental health is to figure out your internal locus of control versus your external locus.
What does the word locus mean?
It basically means area.
Okay.
Like,
thank you.
There's an argument that self-esteem should be an internal locus of control, meaning it should come only from or mostly from what you think about yourself.
Right. Happiness is an inside job.
Right. And when you move that dot to somebody else, your mother that didn't love you, my mother that gave me up, and my father that, you know, could give fuck one.
He did give
one and then 1 million. Right, exactly. But when I move the dot over to him and put the center of control over to him, that's actually me. Now, that's not saying that.
Whoa. When you take the locus off yourself and put it on
him, I give him the power.
That's actually you?
Yeah, that's actually not my fault, but my doing and something I can fix. If I could get myself
You could get it back, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I can get it back. I can say, okay, my mom didn't love me, and that is always going to suck, but it doesn't always it's always going to be a thing. Not even suck. It's always going to be a thing, mm-hmm. but it doesn't have to drive how I feel anymore.
Right. And I know that now.
Right.
But now
– Is your mother still alive?
No. My mother died in a horrible way and I feel completely responsible. But yes, now I know that I love myself and I'm pretty okay with me.
Right.
I really am. I would like some of the window dressing to be different.
Okay.
I would.
Right.
I would like to live a little differently, relate a little differently to the people that are the closest to me.
You're great at that.
My son is my heart, and he is tortures himself a lot for stuff. My partner and I are in this weird competitive ball of ugly a lot.
Mm.
It doesn't feel calm in my house.
Mm.
I don't have that. I love them, but there's no peace.
That's hard.
Every day.
That's hard. Competitive?
Competitive and angry and lack of good faith. And I think it's more him towards me. And he would probably say that. He does say that if I can love my son with this completeness, he just wants 10% of that. But I can't do that because my son's all I have on this earth. It's mine. And I've been given a life of being taken away from. I live here 3 months, we're gone.
Right.
The this was mine, but it was given away.
Right. So the only permanence is your son.
Yeah.
And he's always going to be your son.
And me. Right. And myself. Right.
I always thought that was a weird vibe when people compare themselves to other people's children.
Yeah,
I'm like, do you not understand what having a kid is? Like
he has his own. He has a lot of kids, and he does understand that. But I think he feels that it's intentional that I could control it. And can I? Maybe.
Well, there's a difference between saying you could be a better partner than if you can do it with your son, you can do it with me. That's a whole different thing.
It's tough. It's tough.
That's like saying if you're good at basketball, you should be good at golf. No, it's a whole I'm athletic.
I think what he says is he would like the consideration that I give Jonas, but I am not a helicopter mom. I was a black ops helicopter mom. So it was intense.
Black ops.
So I think that he would like
– you just gave birth to a miniseries – a series on Netflix, Black Ops Helicopter Mom.
I think that my partner would like me to give him the consideration that he needs, and I don't think I have that muscle yet.
Right.
So I
– Are you working on it?
I try every day, but I think I'm – again, I think I'm an abysmal failure at that with him. And all my life, I think I've met one or two people that, yes, this is right. Click.
Right. Right. So you don't believe in just one?
No. How can there just be one? There's so many of us. No. I think that socioeconomic, educational, aspirational, educational, spiritual, if you believe that, geographic, all those things have to come together. It's right. Not just about, oh, we like the same music.
Right.
Or even if I were the most considerate person in the world towards this man, who is a wonderful, loving, handsome, beautiful human being, I don't know that it would be good enough because he wants something that I may just not have, even though I try every day and I show up.
Right.
I show up and I'm there 100%. I don't step out, you know?
Right.
I'm there.
Right.
Until we're supposed to die, you know, till death does us part. Yeah. I'm still there, but it's so hard.
It will amaze. Well, a couple things. First, like that whole cancer thing with Trish.
Yeah, that I went through. Must have blown your mind.
It did. But look, when it first happened, I'm like, we're all gonna die because I can't manage. Like I can't manage this. I'm not a caregiver. I'm not a I can't cook. I'm not this is not my jam. I can't do it. And I'm the only person. I mean, it was 24/7. So I'm like the only person that has to do it. But I can't do it. We're all gonna die. And then like when the situation presented itself, afterwards, when I look back, I'm like, oh, wait, I can do that. And I'm a 60-year-old man. At 59 years old, I was convinced I couldn't do it, and then I did it. Maybe it's the same thing with you. Maybe the situation just hadn't landed yet.
I'm trying to
– But maybe you need a situation.
Yes. Maybe the situation has to change. The externals have to change.
Right.
But right now, I am where I am, and I always – someone told me, be where your feet are.
Right. There it is.
Right.
That's a great saying.
I am where my feet are, right. And I am – giving this my college try. And it's not like I haven't been here before.
Right.
This is number three.
Okay.
And I'm trying very hard because this person is worth it.
Right.
I love this person.
Do you believe in couples therapy?
We're in couples therapy.
Do you believe in it?
I believe in my therapist. He's brilliant.
I don't know if I believe in couples therapy.
I think individual therapy should be part of couples therapy. You can't just go as a couple because one person will talk more, the other person will just – you know, raise their eyebrows or
– Right.
I think he and I should both be an individual. But he is such a good human being, such a kind, loving, sweet, caring person. I feel every single day like I have let him down because I'm not what he wants me to be. But you know how many times that's happened to me in my life? Guys would propose to me on the fourth date. Because
I see that.
They thought I was everything they wanted me to be.
Right.
Kind and loving and bubbly and making you the center of my world.
Right. And a smoke show.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not. I'm not that. I'm me. And I'm very complicated. I'm complex, not complicated.
Right,
there you go.
What part of waking up feeling guilty that you're not that person stops you from being that person? What percentage do you think?
Wow. I feel guilty, and that keeps me on the straight and narrow a lot, because I know that if I know that I could drive my car into 15 people and kill them. I know that I could litter. I know that I could use too much water and when I brush my teeth. I don't do those things because I know they're wrong. In an interpersonal relationship, you have resentments, you have anxieties, you have desires, you have wanting to make them happy. It's so complicated. It's so complicated. And if the other person isn't giving you what you need.
We're in couples. Me and Trish are in couples therapy, right?
Like we are.
Well, not now, but we were. Okay. And the therapist says, I'm going to give you an assignment. I want you to write down a list of things that you think you're accountable for, problems in the relationship that you think you're accountable for. And that you know, and bring that list then to the next session. And I also want you to bring a gift for the other person, not something you spend money on, but something you make, something, right? So I go home and I got a week to do the thing. So I'm like, I'm a songwriter. So I wrote a song and I legal pad of shit I did wrong, right? We get to the next session and therapist goes, okay, go get your list. I'm going through my list. She goes, okay, we get it. You've done a lot of stuff. You, I get it. Do your gift. And so I sang the song. And then she goes to Trish, where's your list? And she goes, I don't have one. I didn't do anything wrong. It's all him. And where's your gift? He doesn't deserve a gift. Yeah. And it was that broken. And then the universe brought some humility, and we learned to, you know, through the disease that's, you know.
I think the biggest thing is I don't think I do anything right for him in his mind.
Is he capable of seeing you do something right?
He'll say, oh, I think you do lots of things right, but I don't feel it.
Yeah, but is that – when we were talking before about the sensors, like I don't – it's it doesn't matter what I do, you're not going to see it. Is it that? Is it that he doesn't see it?
I don't know.
That's a question worth asking,
right? I feel that the way he wakes up in the morning is that she's going to disappoint me again. And then he'll say, it's because you don't love me the right way. You don't love me enough.
And my response is, okay, before we get to what I'm not doing, let's ask the fundamental question. Are you capable of being loved the right way? Like, would you know it if it was happening?
I think if it was somebody else, maybe, yeah. Is it the message or the messenger?
Just my experience, it's almost always – when I say you're not doing this for me, it's almost always that I'm not seeing you do it for me. Now, right. There's cases, sure, where – but like, you know, like – this goes into whether love languages are bullshit or not. And I'm kind of like around
– I read that book.
And what do you think? Are they bullshit or not?
I think it's a little bit of truth, and I think that it was manufactured into a book. Just like I think that stupid play about the guy who had the black girlfriend in it became a musical on Broadway, and it's so big and famous. And I'm like, why? This is such a dumb premise for a show. Like, the love language is a dumb I'm going to try to write a book, but I want it to be a book of practical stuff you do to get yourself happier, because I've lived that.
Right.
So do I think it's his love language that I don't speak?
Yeah.
Are you ever going to have blue eyes?
No.
Right.
Right.
Ever, without context.
Right.
Now, if I want you to have blue eyes and if you love me, will you wear blue contacts every day for the rest of your life?
No, because my argument back would be, if you love me and want me to have blue eyes – If that's what you need, then you chose poorly because you knew from day one I didn't have blue eyes.
Bingo. See, and even with blue contacts, you're never going to have blue eyes.
Right. And I'm always going to be resentful of the fact that I got to put contacts in the morning.
Contacts, right. Yeah. So what you do is you make the best of it.
You compromise, right.
Garrison Keillor, make the best of it.
Right. Garrison Keillor thought I was Andrew McCarthy
in
Grand
cool.
Central Station in 1986 or 1987.
I love his writing, and he's such a flawed person.
Is he? I don't know much about him.
No, we're all flawed, but right. I do love his writing. I love the way he spins words.
Yeah, yeah, he's fantastic. My argument about that love language thing is, and maybe this is what you're saying. Like, I get you have a love language, and this is a way you show love. There's also a way I need to that I need to receive love. And the thing that I think works about love language is when you say, okay, I'm going to try to learn how the language that you need to receive, and I'm going to try to speak it because you're a foreign country and exactly. I need to, you know, I'm going to need to order bread. And right. so I'm going to need to learn a few words.
Exactly.
On the other hand, I hate when people say, well, this is the way I love, take it or leave it.
Oh, yeah, I do too. But that person who's saying that is saying, okay, you live in Serbia, Croatia. I'm coming to live in Serbia, Croatia. It's cold here. They don't have a lot of vegetables, green vegetables. I don't love starches. And I've lived here now for 4 months and 17 days, and I don't like it. So I'm trying to live in Serbia, Croatia with you, John, but it's not that I'm not trying. It's just at some point I'm going to leave it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if I love you, because there's 6 billion of us. Now, I may never find another John. I may be alone for the rest of my life. I may find 100 imitators.
Are you afraid of that?
No. I'm afraid of financial ruin. Okay. That's the one thing that I fear death, because I don't want to not be here. I love life. If I could live forever, I might consider that option.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
And I've thought about this hard and long.
Oh, okay.
But
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
We could talk about this for days. And I don't want to be a vampire, but I want to be out in the light. But
right.
if I could live forever.
You would?
Yeah, I think so. At least for a long time, maybe 500 years. And then on year 499, I might re-up.
Right. Renew the library
yeah,
book.
So for me, my biggest fear is financial insecurity, because if you have no money in our society, you have no health. You
right.
have no access to good health.
Right.
You have no freedom, no choices. And that's what money buys. It gives you freedom and choices.
Right.
And to some degree, to some people, it gives them great wardrobes. It gives them popularity, notoriety. What does Kim Kardashian have? She has the ability to give a good blowjob.
Right.
And so her mother realized that for some reason.
That's my daughter's gift.
Yeah. To make it famous, to make
right.
her famous. So if Kim Kardashian's mother's identified this, like the man who wrote 50 Shades of Grey,
mm-hmm.
it's blither, poor porn. I can write better porn.
It's blither.
And
that's
I have
beautiful.
Written better porn, by the way. I used to write porn a long, long time ago.
Did you really?
Yes. And it's easy to write porn. I can write porn in 10 seconds. But it's just nonsense.
I bet you're a party.
No.
I can write porn.
Cotton underpants, kid.
Fair enough. All right.
And they go from under
right.
my breastbone to about mid-thigh. I could be a Mormon.
You're describing knickers, I believe.
Knickers is what I wear.
There you go.
I wear underpants. Not
that's hilarious.
Panties. Yeah. So, yeah. No, the one thing so being without a partner, I don't have enough confidence in my own ability to sustain myself financially. And that doesn't mean I'm with him because of that, because the
right.
man and I are equally where we are.
Right.
But that would be my only fear, to be alone, is to.
Do you think you would ever stop working?
Never.
Okay. Sure.
Will you?
No. No.
I don't want to. Why?
Right. Well,
you can compose music and talk anywhere.
Right. And the best advice I ever got for a career, which I didn't follow for a long time until recently, is do something that you can get better at no matter how old you are.
There you go.
And
I love that.
This is something I can get better at no matter
yeah,
how old you are. Yeah.
I can get better at so many things. And what I want to do is continue to make people feel like they matter.
Right.
The way I never felt like I did.
Which you are good at, A. Do you think, too, that people that are were raised, I mean, I wasn't raised, people that were raised without parents. Do you think that you feel pain more acutely because it's what you were raised on?
I think you have a higher frequency.
That's okay. Same thing.
You can sense it. I can sense when a person comes in and crosses their arms at the table.
Right.
I can read them. And then people say, did you read my mind? How did you know? But it's because I think we're attuned at different levels of intelligence and intellect.
No, but I mean feel. Like yeah, I agree we have a higher sensitivity. I mean, use the wrong word. I agree we have a higher sensitivity. Like I can tell if you're hurting only because I know that I hurt a lot. And so like I can –
Right.
I can
smell. Posture, smell.
I can smell it.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
But do you think we actually feel it?
More? Do we not have that a higher measure, capacity for it?
Not capacity, a higher
capacity to understand
vulnerability it. To it. Do we have a higher vulnerability to pain because
are we more easily hurt?
They are, thank you.
Are we more easily hurt? Yes.
Yeah.
But are we better at making it better for ourselves?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm quick to be hurt. I'm hurt easily, but I immediately know how to fix it in myself.
Right.
And so I want to fix it in you.
So you have a problem, but you immediately know how to fix it. But you're worried about money.
Right.
Because you can fix it.
No.
Oh,
no?
No. Why?
Because you don't have control over a lot of that. The man does. And when I say the man, I mean authority. And
right.
People who have a lot of money and have for generations – you would never know because they're just so comfortable in who they are. They're generous.
Right.
People who make money through hard work are also generous because they know what it took.
Right.
The nouveau riche, no. They're horrible.
So true.
They're obnoxious. They're ungiving. They're afraid.
Yep.
And the more vulnerable they feel, the less nice they are.
Right.
Because they're going to get caught out.
Right.
People are going to discover what a shit phony I am.
And or, because I got a lot of experience with nouveau riche, they hoard and are arrogant because you didn't earn it.
Right.
Because it came to you without work, you realize it could leave you without
exactly
work. So you're
so
like
you're
said, you're scared, right?
But there are also people who will lord it over you. My belief in school uniforms, I don't care what your parents earn. Right. Every kid comes to school, comes to learn. Everyone should wear a uniform because it should not be about showing off.
Right.
And there are people who will show off the money they have, show off the power they have by being cruel because they can be.
Right. Yep.
By being withholding because they can be.
Yep. And is that evil?
No, it's pain. It's damage.
Pain. Right.
It's damage.
Right.
Is a dog that is born?
Well, dogs are different, man.
All dogs are good.
Yeah, right.
But is okay? Let me try to find an example of evil. A shark. Shark, you're swimming in the ocean. Your little 3-year-old kid is hanging on to a paddleboard. The shark sees an opportunistic hunter, and is hungry. Turns upside down and eats your little kid. Was that evil?
Nah.
No, right?
But
the shark's not damaged.
No.
Okay.
Right.
But the guy, there's a guy swimming, sees your 3-year-old kid, and he's angry because somebody hurt him. His mother didn't love him. His boss treated him like crap, and he's got rage. And he takes your little kid and he holds him underwater till the kid's dead.
Right.
Is that evil? The act is evil.
The act is evil.
Is the person evil?
I don't know because when I carry that argument, I want to say no, the person's not evil, the person's sick.
It's damaged.
Damaged, right. I want to say that. But then my next sentence is too uncomfortable, which is, well, if you're damaged, you need help and not consequence. And so now I can't.
In a society that has that ability, that orientation. But in other societies, they'd throw them out the window, off the mountain, or feed them to the lions.
Right.
So our society believes that we should be kind, try to help, But at what point? Because if that madman is holding your child underwater and laughing about it right. and enjoying it and getting an erection and an orgasm after your child is dead, is that evil or damaged? And how damaged that you can never fix? Because you did say that.
Yes.
You said it would take too long to fix him.
Let me bring that back one step. Can it be both? Can it be both evil and damaged?
No. I think it can be damaged and mentally ill to the point where you don't even know what you're doing.
Right.
You don't know what you're doing. Because we as humans are not programmed to do that.
Right.
But we do kill each other in war, don't we?
Yes. Yes.
And so should every soldier be punished?
Well, see, that is, yeah, that's an absolute morality. Killing's either right or it's wrong, but it's not. If someone's going to – if a person's going to –
But if you blow up a village full of children and women?
There, burn. Burn.
But if that child has a bomb strapped to it, is going to run to you and blow you up? See, this is the nuances of this.
Right.
We could talk about this all day and all year.
Right. The challenge with that subject is any argument other than I have to shoot the kid because the kid's going to blow me up, any argument other than that denies that self-preservation is our first and biggest driver.
Right.
And it's always going
to
be.
To survive.
Exactly. Hold your breath for 2 minutes and I guarantee you self-preservation will show itself to you.
A friend of mine wrapped a scarf around her neck, tied it to a doorknob, and leaned down until she couldn't breathe anymore and died. So how can self-preservation have what happened there?
What happened there?
Same argument you made earlier?
That's a sick person.
That's an argument you made earlier that
right.
the pain was so much
it,
that
right.
she chose against self-preservation.
Or I have – because I was there. I had a plan to kill myself and almost did. And what happens, people brand suicide as like this selfish act to try to end the pain. That's not it at all. What it is – you get to a point where you think there is nothing better with you in it. You look at your kid. You look at your life. You look at other people's lives.
Right.
You look at the world and you say there is.
And you're 100% convinced.
Yeah, 100% convinced that there's nothing is better with me in it. It's not that you don't have the tolerance for pain. It's that tolerating the pain isn't going to make any difference at all.
It's not going to be better. And
right.
that's the premise of It's a Wonderful Life.
Is it really?
You saw the movie.
Yeah, I didn't know that was it.
He made all these mistakes. He thought the world would be better and he tried to drown himself.
Right. Yep.
And then Clarence came on and said, you don't know. Look.
That's it. That's it. I forgot that. Yes, that's precisely what it is. You get to the point where nothing's getting better. And then somebody, in my case, my daughter, comes and says, well, wait, jackass, there is something.
Right, but that's the ego. And the mind plays that egocentric trick on you.
Yeah. Well, that's suicidal ideation is so insidious that it speaks to you. It's the only language that is both verbal and nonverbal.
It also blinds you.
Yeah. It's verbal and it's nonverbal. You can verbally process it and you can see it. You can see that this right. person across the street that I don't know fucking hates me.
The guy who's no reply hates you.
Yeah.
And we don't know why.
Yeah.
But that's my interest. I would just want to know why you hate me. It's like, tell me why you hate me. Tell me what I've done wrong. Then I'm not going to necessarily change at all.
Right.
But at least I understand. That's because to me, when you understand and I don't use his name because a lot of people may not know who I am and may not know who he is. And I don't want to put his life out. But I always said to him, can you explain this to me? Let me understand because I want to understand it. Then I can start to fix it.
Right. Right.
And so MrNoReply.com.
Yeah. I've gotten to the point where it's funny and like we're doing a project. So literally everybody I do a project with, one of the first things I have to tell them is you're going to get an email from this jackass. He's going to tell you that.
Oh, I'm going to – I want Mr. No Reply. Please write to me. I would love to talk – and I'm not kidding. I have no animus towards you. I'd like to know what it is that makes you dislike John so much. And I'd like to understand why and why you don't have better things to do, like find either better people to hate or – right? Find joy or find people to love.
Yeah, just be happy. But that's so hard, isn't it? Like if you like.
And by the way, I love my fellow a lot.
Right.
He's.
No, you wouldn't be in pain about it if you didn't love him.
I wouldn't be in pain about it, and I wouldn't be here for all these years. Keep trying, but you know it's tiring.
It is exhausting to be in. Like you said before, like there's no peace every day.
Yeah.
That.
It's being in a desert and seeing mirages of water and then occasionally finding water, but
right.
It's hard.
It's an endurance sport.
Hard. Yeah. Relationships right? are hard.
Yeah. They're an endurance sport.
How long have you been with Trish?
27 years.
Wow. And I'm here 12, 13.
Yeah. So yeah, but it wasn't 27 happy years.
Yeah.
And at all.
Did you have hallway sex?
Did we have hallway sex?
You know what hallway sex is, right?
No. I thought you meant actually in a hallway,
well,
and I'm going back.
I've had sex in the hallway.
Okay.
Hallway sex is marriage has three areas of sex. It's everywhere sex,
right.
All the time sex.
Okay.
Everywhere, all the time.
Right.
That's the beginning.
Yes, that
then
is.
Then there's bedroom sex.
Okay.
When you have sex, if you have sex, it's in the bed, in the bedroom.
Right, right.
And then there's hallway sex, which is when you pass each other in the hallway on your way to work in the morning. It's fuck you. No, fuck you. That's hallway sex.
We have not had hallway sex, but – well, we did.
I've had hallway sex.
I think I have had hallway sex with her. I had – so this isn't hallway sex, but it's related. So I had trouble sleeping, so I took Ambien, right? So one morning I get up. And I go to the kitchen and she's like, fuck you. And I'm like, what? She said, fuck you. And I'm like, what? And she's like, don't ever fucking talk to me again. I didn't know. We had apparently had like an hour and a half fight that I didn't remember.
You don't remember. Because
I was on Ambien and yeah.
Wow. What did you say?
So I don't know. I'm like, Trish does have this one amazing gift. The minute she realizes either she's wrong or that there's a good reason for something, it's over.
Oh, she and I are the same.
Oh,
when
really?
I
you
know
can
I'm
do
wrong,
that?
When I know I'm wrong and you've shown me I'm wrong.
The argument's over right
argument's
then and there?
Over because I admit that I'm wrong. But until I know I'm wrong, I'm right.
It's go. Yeah.
And I mean, he and I have cameras all over the house. So many times it's like, pull up the camera. Let's watch and see what we actually did say.
Oh, wow.
That's what it has to come down to. I need an adjudicator, a mediator.
Right. I'll bet that's helpful though.
Sometimes, except that I don't think the camera picks up enough sound. I have to raise the volume. So I want to talk a little bit about our project.
Okay.
I think that you are the most generous, one of the more generous people I have met in my time in New York.
Thank you.
And I've met many people. And you're generous of yourself. You're generous of your talent. And you just have a generous heart. So,
because I didn't have parents.
Yes, you too.
right. No, that's why you're the way you are.
Yep. We're brother and sister.
There you go.
So, the Lifted Project.
Yes.
Right. Which we're not talking about jowls. We're talking about spirit, soul, and mind.
Yep.
Tell me what the micro and macro ideas are for you. Because I'm thrilled. I am so excited to do this.
First off, you're being more generous than I am in the Lifted Project. So thank you because you're hosting it.
I'm hosting it. And you've invited a whole lot of people. And I looked at the list and I'm like, wow, what does this person bring? But I know that you found something in it. So I did not question.
Oh, thank you. Well, I tell you, so the genesis of the project was, I'm going to cry. I guarantee you I'm going to cry.
I love that.
I can't get through this. So Trish goes through head and neck cancer, and the treatment for head and neck cancer is barbaric.
Yeah.
It's barbaric. They build a mask that fits your face. They strap you on a table, and they burn your face
every
day for 6-7 weeks. And you're getting chemo. And when they hand this person back to you, they can't walk, they can't talk, they can't think. They're riddled with drugs. And there's very little support after that. Because, and I don't blame the medical professional. Their job is keep you alive.
Right.
So, and they did that. And thank you so much for that. But you lose the person. And all Trish would do is sit in a chair with her head tipped because she couldn't even hold her head up, and just tears would come down her cheeks all day. Couldn't talk. So like your body gets better whether you want it to or not. And her body got functional. Her body was doing stuff. Like she could walk, she could sit in a chair, she could talk. And so she did all that. And her treatment ended December 30th. By June, she could walk from us to the door. She could talk, but there was no person in there, and she was scared to death of going out. She never went out. She didn't want people to see her. When she did go out, she wore this big scarf because they lopped her head off. She says she's a human pest dispenser. They lopped her head off. Scared and wouldn't go anywhere. Would go to work, come home, and she's a third grade teacher. And talk about flow. Like, it's amazing when you're in flow. Like, she could teach the in third grade, but then come home and it would all be done. And there was no person in there anymore. So I went to my friend Julie, who's a trainer, and I said, look, she teaches these exercise classes. And I'm like, look, can I bring her in the back? And, you know, she can't exercise, but she could, you know, walk in place and just be in front of people. And she's like, yeah, bring her in. So I brought her in June, and Julie is an angel. Oh, here we go. Okay, so Julie's an angel. I bring Trish into the class, and Trish is in the back in all these baggy clothes and a baseball cap and a scarf, and she doesn't want anybody looking at her. And Julie does about 10 minutes of the class. And Julie's like, fuck this. She goes to the back of class, gets Trish, brings her up front, turns her around to face everybody, and does the whole class with Trish. Trish gets scared shitless, leaves, and just is sobbing. Julie sits down with her for 45 minutes, and they're forehead to forehead. I don't know what they said, but they're forehead to forehead. We leave, and Trish says, I want to come back. So I'm like, okay. So I bring her back. I bring her back every day throughout the whole summer, and every day Julie taught specifically to her, coached her through. And there were times where, so Julie said, okay, your job is, there's a 3-inch platform. Your job is to jump on this 3-inch platform. And when you get treated like Trish did, you have neuropathy, which your brain stops talking to your body and you can't, she couldn't do it. She couldn't get both feet to go at the same time. So she fell down, and she's like, I can't believe. Like, the treatment's now 7 months over, and I can't lift my feet 3 inches. So she just drops the phone and is overwhelmed, and she starts crying. Julie comes over and literally puts her body over Trish's to protect her so that nobody else could see. And this is in a room full of people. And again, they're forehead to forehead. Julie starts whispering to her. And I don't know what Julie's saying, but she's whispering. And she gets up, and she steps on the 3-inch block. So Julie then, after that, brings out this 2-foot tall block and says, you're jumping on this. Not today, but you're jumping on this. So they work for this every day. They work out together every day. And Julie's an angel. She checks what she's eating. She bought me. Julie's not getting paid to do this. Julie doesn't have to do this. Julie's a popular trainer. She doesn't want the, you know, she doesn't need. So one day, and this is the origin of the Lifted Project. One day, Trish is standing in front of this 2-foot block. And she can maybe step up on it at this point, but she can't jump on it. She can maybe step on it. And Julie walks over to her, and they go forehead to forehead again. And I hear Julie say, you can do this today. You are a feather. You can fly. You can do this today. And she just stepped back. And it's a stupid thing, jumping on a 2-foot block. But it's not stupid. Because doing something that you never believed you would be able to do after getting your head cut off is the most magical part of your life. And I swear to God, she jumped up on that block. And the whole room's crying. And Julie's jumping up and down. And we and Trish looks at me like, I'm going to be alive. And I'm like, yeah, you're going to be alive. You got this. And what I took away from that moment is how no money needs to change hands. No money changed hands. You just have to shine a light on something and tell it that it can do what it can do.
The spirit lifted her.
And then you get lifted. So fast forward from that, and I'm like, well, wait a second. What if that's institutional? What if I do something, we do something for institutions that doesn't involve giving them money? What if we just do that same thing? What if we just have an event and we just say, you can do what you do? But
we want to shine a light on it so right. others can see it.
Right, right. So you can see it, and we also want you to see people believing in you, not giving you money, just believing in you.
Right, because we don't want you to be the guy sitting in the house with all the beer cans on your lawn.
Right.
Because we just gave you.
Right, right.
We're going to teach you how to fish.
There it is. Right. So and then the We Are the World documentary comes on. And I'm like, well, wait a second.
You're making me cry. Again.
Oh, sorry.
I'm glad I'm crying.
Oh, good. Okay, good. So then the We Are the World documentary comes on. And I'm watching it. And I'm like, you know what? That's the Hudson Valley. There are so many talented musicians here.
Per capita. I agree.
Right?
It's astounding.
It's ridiculous.
And some of them have less ego and way more talent because the ratio in New York City –
right.
A lot of ego, some talent.
Some talent, right.
Up here, it's wild.
It's insane.
They grow like the trees.
They do. So I'm doing the show, and half 50% of my – by design, 50% of the shows are musicians. So I'm doing the show, and I'm like, you know, start asking musicians, and musicians are asking me, and I'm listening. I'm like, holy fuck, you are great. Get on here. And so I'm watching We Are the World, and I'm like, well, that's the Hudson Valley. And then I'm like, okay, stupid. So this is what we're going to do. So you have agreed to host on April. Thank you. And also be my spirit guide, by the way. So thank you for that. On April 21st from 1 to 3 o'clock, yep. which is not going to go till 3.
No, it's going to be from 1 until people leave.
Right. But by the way, come early and eat at the cafe.
Yes, come early and eat and be ready to drink some coffee and be ready to make your joyful noise.
Yeah.
And watch this because you're going to be invited to watch this.
Yeah. And it's going to be – I have written a song with Olivia, who was on the show. And she's a 24-year-old. She's not as well known as she should be. She's crazy.
What is her last name?
She doesn't go by it. Right. She just goes by Liv.
Liv. Okay. Liv. Well, her last name is Bolger, right?
Bolger, yeah.
Yeah. And is she related to Mark Bolger?
I don't know.
Okay.
But extraordinarily talented songwriter. And so we wrote a song. And so here's another cool part. Every musician I invited said yes. There's 37 of them. And the only ones – there's two that I invited that said no. And the only reason is because they're not going to be in the state.
Wow, that's great. So everyone wants a part.
Everybody's willing to. Yeah, everybody's
so
willing to do it.
You have 37 threads that are going to be woven into this beautiful tapestry.
And then the idea is we're going to do that. That's going to be a great event. The charities are going to have tables there. There's four.
If you have one line or one tone note, I'd love to sing it.
Okay, yes, you're in. Absolutely. Yeah, that's the least I can do. Now I have to add you to the poster. Which is fine. Yes. No. Yes. Totally. And
you pencil me in at the bottom.
No. We're already on the poster, but now I got to put you in the singer part of the poster.
Oh, okay.
And then the idea is we're going to distribute this. We're going to distribute the song, and hopefully we can get airplay. And we're going to have media there, and hopefully the media will also help us to make people aware of these amazing charities.
So if you're listening to this and you have a cousin who works at ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, Fox, PBS, BBC, CNN, if you have a friend who's a publicist, if you have a friend who wants to be part of one action that can help lift the world –
yeah.
Call John.
Please.
Call me.
Call Paul, yeah.
I want to be able to help and I want to get shine light on this project.
Thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah, because we need you see, a lot of good things happen.
Oh, by the way, we should make a note. I asked you, I said, hey, I have 37 musicians, there's a band, you know, there's going to be a bunch of people, it's going to be rowdy, they're going to drop coffee cups, blah, blah, blah. It took you less than a third of a second to say yes. So thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you for coming up with this brilliant idea. Yeah. And thank you to Hudson Valley Regional Airport and Dutchess County and our really efficient, effective, creative, and wonderful new county executive, Sue Serino, who I've known for 35 years. And she's all about helping people. Anything that helps us, the planet, all living things, I am so about that. But I am just so excited because this is going to not be necessarily so structured, although we did say you have a runner, right?
We have a runner.
Yes.
Everybody has a part in the song. It's, you know, it's going to be a firm rehearsal. I'm going to try to keep it loose, but you can't do it if you don't have guardrails.
That's right. I went to a meeting yesterday. I'm not going to say what I went to the meeting about because I don't want to expose anything. But there were a lot of people at this meeting, about 11 people, and it's all towards a goal. But all 11 people had a different way to get to the goal.
Mm.
And all of them were waving their arms and saying, ooh, Mr. Cotter, pick me. And it's going to be tough without—
That's a shit show.
A bunch of musicians without a conductor.
I'm conducting.
Thank you, because you have cacophony.
Right. I'm not playing, sound. I'm not singing, I'm conducting. So it's, yeah. No, there's no John. So I'm going
to. There's no We Are the World if everyone doesn't want to be part of the world too, and if somebody wants to own too much of the world and.
Right. So no, it's a structured song. We're sending out. I'm going to rough track the song. I mean, like kind of rough version. It's just me. It's a choir song. So when I do it, I'll do it for you in a second. But when I do it.
Doing it off the air,
yeah,
so you guys are just going to have to salivate till you get to be there and hear it.
It's a choir song, so it by definition it has to be defined, and I'm even planting where everybody has to stand because there's small groups that sing, and we're going to do a couple takes of it just because it's a live performance. We'll do a couple takes, but
it's not the Honeymooners. It didn't go live.
No. right. But we're gonna and we've been here 2 hours.
I cannot believe that.
How crazy is that?
I could.
You're fucking awesome, man. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for allowing me. Thank you for listening to me. Thank you for being my friend.
Can you please give the address of Paula's Cafe? Please?
Paula's Runway Cafe is in the terminal building of Hudson Valley Regional Airport, located at 263 New Hackensack Road in Wappingers Falls, New York. It's an airport. It's a small airport. Fly in, drive in. You are welcome. We take people of all ilks, stripes, sizes, colors. Be a good person and you're welcome in.
And this woman is amazing. If you're going to spend money on food, go spend it with her. I'm John. This is Home From Here.